Good morning and welcome in the name of Christ. Good that you have joined us for this morning's message on this beautiful fall day. Today we are working with the story of Ruth, taken from chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. Last Sunday we celebrated All Saints Sunday at our church. This is a day that has been set aside to remember those who have gone before us, those friends and loved ones who have nurtured us and been an example for us to follow, and for those who have been an inspiration for us as well. Today is a day that the church has set aside to honor the memory of those saints, those people of faith, who have been a part of our lives. Several years ago, when we were living in the Quincy, Illinois area, a local organization was sponsoring trips for veterans to travel to Washington, D.C., so that they might visit the war memorials and other places of interest for them. They called these trips honor flights, and they were paid for by local businesses and sponsors, then offered to the veterans at no cost as a way of honoring their service to their country. I do not know if these flights are still being done, but I do know that they have worked their way through all of the World War II vets, the Korean veterans, and were taking Vietnam veterans already several years back. My father was one of the last of the World War II vets to get to go, as very few of them were still alive at that time. His generation, the generation that journalist Tom Brokaw named as the greatest generation in his best-selling book of the same name, is almost all gone now. As I reflected back on these things, I also started thinking about all the history my father's generation had witnessed and all they had seen and accomplished in their lifetimes. They saw more change and more advancements in technology than their fathers, their grandfathers, their great-grandfathers, perhaps even their great-great-grandfathers, all put together. They were the ones who grew up during the Great Depression and also lived through it. My father went from farming with a horse to a tractor to a combine. He went from the agrarian age to the jet age to the space age to the computer age to the communication age, all in one lifetime. His generation were the ones who created the greatest era of economic prosperity and the expansion of the middle class in our country's history. They did truly make America great. This is the era that President Trump refers to with his slogan, "Make America Great Again." The people of my father's generation were also the ones who fought in and won the greatest, most terrible world war in history. For a number of years now, we have heard regret and even some outrage expressed by the mainstream media at the number of casualties America has suffered in the last two decades with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Well, perhaps we should put these things into perspective. According to Wikipedia, the war in Iraq, which lasted from 2003 to 2011, saw 4,497 casualties resulting from combat. The war in Afghanistan, which is the longest-lasting war in American history, 2001 to present, has seen, at last count, 2,216 soldiers killed in combat. Total casualties for both wars, 6,713. When my father's generation stormed the beaches of Normandy on June 6, 1944, D-Day, there were 6,603 American servicemen killed in just one day. World War II only lasted from 1939 to 1945, just roughly 6 years. But the total American military casualties for World War II was 4,005,399. Now, when you consider the sacrifices this generation made, and also remember everything else they were able to accomplish, I believe Tom Brokaw was right in naming them the greatest generation. But then, there is the generation I am a part of that we call the baby boomers. The adjectives most widely used to describe my generation are not very positive. We are called self-absorbed, childish, noisy, and materialistic. Some have called us great, that is, great at pitching a fit, when the Starbucks barista messes up our fat-free double latte. But be careful, especially if you are a member of one of the next generations coming up, the Gen Xers, or the Millennials, or the Generation Zs. Better not be pointing fingers, because a lot of the adjectives used to describe you are even worse. Now, I don't want to take away from the accomplishments of my father's generation. However, there have been a lot of problems addressed and made better by my generation that were ignored by his. Racism, environmental protection, gender equality, and removing barriers to the handicapped, just to name a few. Just perhaps the label of greatness may be a very subjective one, as every generation points to the one coming behind them and suggests that they are a bit spoiled and have things much easier than they had it. By the way, complaints that the youngest generation is spoiled and has things much easier than the preceding ones have always been with us. Just listen to these words from author Gary Kamliah. Complaints that the current generation is inferior to the preceding ones are probably as old as human history. The ancient Greeks were given to lamenting the loss of their fathers' manly virtues. The Romans were forever looking back to a golden age of heroic simplicity. The Renaissance was driven by a desire to recapture the lost greatness of the ancient world. If Cro-Magnon man was able to write, he would, no doubt, have lamented the passing of the noble Neanderthals. So it is hardly surprising that the baby boomers, that vast cohort of Americans born between 1945 and the early 1960s, have been compared unfavorably, often by themselves, to their parents' generation. And today, I often hear elderly people lamenting about the youngest generation's faults and shortcomings, while looking back at their own through rose-colored glasses. The story of Ruth begins with a family of Israelites facing a time of famine, and then having to move far away from the place where they had always lived, Bethlehem. We might compare this to the Great Depression of the 1930s and the migration westward that took place in this country to the Californian Promised Land. The mother of the family, Naomi, travels with her husband and two sons to the land of Moab in search of a better life. While there, Naomi's husband dies, and her two sons both marry Moabite women. Later on, both of her sons also die, and Naomi is left with only her two daughters-in-laws, Orpha and Ruth. With no husbands to provide for them, Naomi realizes that her best bet is to move back to Bethlehem, where she can at least find members of her extended family who have an obligation to provide for her. However, she wants to give her two daughter-in-laws the chance to stay behind if they would rather do so. "Go back, each of you, to your mother's house," Naomi tells them. "May the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead, and with me." Also, I believe, Naomi suspects that her people will not readily accept these Moabite daughter-in-laws of hers, and will not treat them kindly. So Orpha takes Naomi's advice, kisses her farewell, and goes home to her mother's house. But Ruth chooses to stay with her, saying, "Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God." Verse 16. What an example of faith Naomi must have been for Ruth. She commits to stay with Naomi and puts her faith in Naomi's people and in her God to care for her. And we know that the God of Israel will smile on Ruth's determination and her commitment to Naomi. If we read on, we discover that Ruth will meet one of Naomi's kinsmen by the name of Boaz, and they will have a romantic encounter of sorts and marry. However, if you read carefully the story, you should take note that Ruth was certainly no Miss Goody Two-Shoes, and neither was Naomi. They were both calculating, manipulative, scheming, and a bit devious. We should not put her up on a pedestal. Ruth knew she needed to find a husband, for as a widow in those days, she had very few rights and little means of support. And with a lot of help from Naomi, she is directed to glean barley in the field of a very eligible bachelor by the name of Boaz, who does notice her. He invites her to work alongside of his servant girls. She is after a husband, and with the help of Naomi and a few cups of wine, she will snare one. If we read on, we see a rather racy story begin to unfold. That night, when Boaz fell asleep after having several cups of wine, we are told, Naomi tells Ruth what to do. She is to slip into his bed while he sleeps. The text reads that she uncovers his feet and lays down. Now, this is actually a Hebrew idiom, which means she exposes his private parts. Now, when Boaz awakens about midnight, he finds himself exposed and naked, and a naked woman lying in his bed with him. He remembers drinking some wine and going to sleep, but many of the other details of the last few hours, shall we say, are a bit fuzzy. Not only did Boaz not remember what had happened in the last few hours, but he especially could not remember if you know what had taken place. So, being a man of integrity, he told his helpers, "Let it not be known that the woman came to the threshing floor." He then did what he thought was the only proper thing that he could do. He took her as his wife. Yes, Ruth and Naomi were both, as we said, manipulative, scheming, and a bit devious. They set out to find Ruth a husband, and Ruth went to work obtaining one, by whatever means necessary. But just in case you are wondering just how much God would bless this union between a Hebrew man and a Moabite widow, this couple produced a son named Obed, who was the father of Jesse, who was the father of David, whom we now know would become Israel's greatest leader and king. Ruth also contributes to the bloodline that will eventually produce Jesus, the Messiah, whom the old prophets foretold would be in the house and lineage of David. Now, we can spend hours arguing who is the greatest generation, but in fact, each generation has had its shortcomings and its accomplishments. When it comes down to those who have made a decision to follow Jesus Christ, we are one generation. We are God's generation, and together we should be open, equal, and accepting of everyone who places their trust in God and wishes to become a disciple of Jesus Christ. In this, there should be no generational barriers. Author Leonard Steinhorn writes these words, "There was a time when women were told to stay at home, and blacks and minorities were told to stay separate. But in this new time, this is the time of God's generation. The only instruction needed is to fear the Lord and to follow Jesus Christ faithfully. There was a time when those who marched to a different drum were pretty much told to stay silent," says Steinhorn. "But today, we welcome every voice to join in praise of God who sent Jesus to us so that we might be saved from our sins. In the church, every voice is welcome, and every voice is needed from every age. Moabite and Israelite, male and female, red state and blue state, and those from every generation. All Saints Sunday directs us to give thanks for those who have gone before us and for the great cloud of witnesses who have raised us, nurtured us, taught us, mentored us, and have been an example for us to follow, and also for those faithful saints yet to come. For all of these, we remember and give thanks. And as we honor them, we are reminded that we will be the saints for the coming generations. May we live up to that standard and not falter in our responsibility to represent Christ well." so that we may be salt and light. Amen.